Hey there, Pharmacy Podcast listeners, and a special shout out to our pharmacy owners. Do you feel like you're expected to do more for your patients with less time, less money? There's a product out there I have to tell you about that will do more for your customers and more for your pharmacy. The Pen Needle UltiGuard Safe Pack provides 100 premium pen needles and a sharps container all in one. All this for the same copay for your patients as pen needles alone. When pharmacies dispense the Pen Needle UltiGuard Safe Pack, they see consistently higher revenue and higher margins. Check out the Pen Needle UltiGuard Safe Pack for yourself. Go to UltiGuardSafePack.com/podcast. That's UltiGuardSafePack.com/podcast. Let us know what you think, and thanks for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.
You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation, Pharmacy Podcast listeners, thanks for coming back. This is the founder of the Pharmacy Podcast, Todd Urey. We have a really great interview for you. This is amazing opportunity for all of us with investigative journalist Catherine Eban. If you don't know who Catherine Eban is, she is an amazing author. I really enjoyed this interview. She is a Fortune magazine contributor, an Andrew Carnegie Fellow. Catherine's articles on pharmaceutical counterfeiting, gun trafficking, and intimidating interrogations by the CIA have won international attention and numerous awards. Her first book, Dangerous Doses, A True Story of Cops, Counterfeiters, and the Contamination of America's Drug Supply, was named one of the best books of 2005 and was a Barnes & Noble Discoverer Great New Writers pick. Catherine's lectures, frequently on the topic of pharmaceutical integrity, are extremely popular. The book we're talking about today is Bottle of Lies, The Inside Story of the Generic Drug Boom, which is a New York Times bestseller and a New York Times 100 Notable Books of 2019. Based on a decade of reporting, the book reveals widespread fraud and dire conditions in the overseas manufacturing plants where the majority of our low-cost generic medicines are made. You gotta take a listen and share this episode with a fellow pharmacist and pharmacy students. Pick up a copy today of Bottle of Lies. You will not be disappointed. And now, here's the interview with Catherine Eban. You know, I had the honor to interview an author of a book that really kind of opened my eyes, and realizing that there's facets of our drug supply chain that we probably don't understand. I know I didn't. Rosemary Gibson was the author of China Rx, Exposing the Risks of America's Dependence on China for Medicine. That was the ingredients. And then I met her at the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists. And another author that I am honored to bring on the show today and really ask some questions about the publication and the book known as Bottle of Lies, The Inside Story of the Generic Drug Boom, Catherine Eban. Welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be on with you.
So you have been, I want to say, touched or blessed or whatever the word would be, to be able to write something with so much passion, and the data that you bring to the table, exposing the corporate greed and arrogance of so many manufacturers that seem to lead with their stock holders and prices in mind more so than the patients that they're supposed to be serving. And this book, I've only been through half of it, just to be upfront with the listeners. If you haven't began reading this, Bottle of Lies, obviously easy to find, as well as Catherine is very easy to find via Google. But tell us a little bit about yourself first before we kind of jump into the Bottle of Lies.
Sure. So I've been an investigative journalist for about 20 years. I've written on a lot of different topics, from you know, pharmaceutical issues, public health issues, national security issues, you know, exposing all different kinds of things. But this particular investigation, which is into, you know, the remote factories that are making the majority of America's generic drugs, was a 10-year project. So I have worked on this for about half the time that I've been an investigative journalist, because it was just that complicated and challenging a story to put together. You know, but the end result is that there is this hidden world behind the generic drugs that most Americans take, that people really have very little idea about. And in fact, I think many pharmacists don't really know either. So that is, you know, the book is a narrative investigation that tells the story of this hidden world.
You got into the FDA documenting some of the whistleblowers that participated in giving some of the information. The fact that there was connections from China and India and Africa, Brazil. What an amazing kind of summary of all of this. And there's probably aspects of the drug supply chain leading to the generic boom and what's become of it and still happening that we don't know, that I think we could use your publication as a blueprint to dig deeper into the facets of safety as well as relevance to a disease state that's supposed to be focused on to give better costs of medications to patients that are desperate. And I think this is a first stage, Catherine, of what you've done.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, the implications of this are really life and death for patients around the world. You know, initially I had exposed the inner workings of a giant Indian company called Rembaxi, which was faking the data in its applications to regulators around the world, basically passing off substandard drugs as legitimate generics by falsifying its testing data and submitting that to regulators. I was able to expose what went on in Rembaxi in large part because of a heroic whistleblower named Dinesh Thakkar, who basically risked his life to alert the FDA to what was going on. But after I told that story in Fortune magazine in 2013 in great detail, my question was, well, you know, is Rembaxi just this singularly corrupt drug company, or was the conduct of Rembaxi in faking its quality data somehow more widely spread around the world? And in fact, that is what I found, which is that a large number of generic drug manufacturers overseas are faking their quality data. They are manipulating testing data, and they are, you know, inventing quality information that just doesn't exist, or manipulating existing data, all in the service of getting drugs approved by regulators more quickly.
Yes, and also the fact that you unraveled how the generic manufacturers were cutting corners that were supposed to be part of a process to get these medications out to market. And that's scary to me, because we trust that when I take something that's been prescribed by my physician and processed by my pharmacist, that what I'm taking is what I believe it is. And I'm taking a generic because I want to save some money. So I'm one of millions, and if not billions, of people that believe that. So this is a tip of the iceberg to dig, you know, deeper into how do we as a healthcare industry, global healthcare industry, fight back to ensure that organizations are doing what they have promised to do?
Well, that is a great question. Among the many things that I have advocated, I think that pharmacists and patients need more information. So why is it that we don't actually know where our drugs are made? You know, we have country of origin labeling on our breakfast cereal. You can go into Whole Foods and find out how many, you know, miles away your apple came from. But we just don't have that information about drug ingredients and finished doses. I think that information should be made available to the public. I think the industry probably does not want that information available to the public, but I think that patients deserve it. You know, right now, I mean, I've asked pharmacists, do you have any information about where our drugs are made? And, you know, they don't. They have stock bottles behind them that show the corporate headquarters of the drug company, but it doesn't tell you where the drug's made.
Absolutely. And I wonder where it begins to fall to, I don't want to use the word blame, but responsibility. And for example, our three largest wholesalers, McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, and Cardinal Health, you know, in their line of distribution, pedigree, and tracking, you know, where does the gates open and close to ensure America's not only safety, that's number one, but number two is quality. I want to, you know, we've always heard from many patients, just from me being a fan of pharmacists, that they'll, you know, tongue in cheek, poke fun at a patient that says, well, I want the brand because it's, you know, it's better than the generic. And we as an industry will roll our eyes at such comments and say, oh, come on, the generic's the same thing. It's just less money. Well, in this case, that might not be the case.
Right. You know, so part of the problem here, we have all been reassured by the FDA that there is no difference between our brand and our generic drugs. And that is why pharmacists say that to their patients, right? Because that's what we're told and that's what we've been led to believe. But one of the things that the book exposes is that the FDA's own investigators are going into these plants overseas and they're finding shocking conditions. They're finding data fraud. They're finding, you know, bird and insect infestations. And in many cases, which I was able to document, they are recommending sanctions against these plants. And the FDA at its headquarters is ignoring those recommendations. They're downgrading findings against these plants, you know, partly out of a sort of political incentive to demonstrate for Congress how many low-cost drug approvals they're making, right? So partly they're ignoring the evidence that their own investigators are bringing them. And that's a very serious situation.
Well, and I think of the specialty pharmacy sector. We have five sectors that I concentrate on: community, long-term care, senior care, compounding, health system or hospital system, and then specialty. When I think of specialty, the prices are tenfold, and the hands-on need to document adherence goes back into something called REMS reporting and risk mitigation in order to ensure, based on the manufacturer's call to action of the pharmacist and physician, that the patient is compliant. And something that you noted in the book was finding out that an AIDS medication, bacterial infections, and other components of the medications were underpowered, and then other medications for other disease states, such as kidney health and helping people with problems, also underpowered or has contaminants in it. Catherine, it blows my mind. It really is shocking.
You know, it shocked me too, to be honest with you. I mean, when I started this investigative project in 2008, I started because of a tip. I had gotten a phone call from a radio show host named Joe Graydon, who runs the People's Pharmacy. Joe Graydon, who knew my work, had contacted me and said that he was getting flooded with these complaints from patients who'd been switched to generic drugs and were suffering side effects. And he didn't know what the problem was. He was just telling me that he was getting these complaints. And he suggested that I look into it. So, you know, when I started investigating, I was doing what was sort of straightforward consumer health reporting, trying to talk to patients and doctors. Yes, there were problems, there were complaints. Doctors, especially those who prescribe narrow therapeutic index drugs, where dosing is really important. So the endocrinologists and cardiologists, they were having problems stabilizing their patients. And these switches between generic versions was a problem. But as I got deeper into this and began realizing that the majority of our generic drugs are made overseas, largely in India and China, you know, what began as a sort of kind of medical reporting turned into this global corporate crime reporting, which is really where the heart of the book is and the heart of my findings are. You know, that these were the problems for patients thousands of miles away lay in decisions that were being made in the executive suites of these giant generic drug manufacturers that the entire world depends on. So, you know, it was really quite a quite an investigation.
So where has this book taken you now? And are you being called to continue to participate in investigations through Congress or the DEA or the, you know, the other federal organizations that are designed to protect the public?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've spoken with a number of staffers in the congressional committees that are now investigating this. And I've spoken with the GAO, which is, you know, government accountability organization, which is also investigating this. You know, it's right now there's so much chaos in Washington and chaos over the role of government in protecting consumers. It's hard to see what exactly is going to happen. Right. But I would say we're at a moment where there is a much wider recognition now of some of the very critical safety issues. And there is a lot of ideas on the table about how to address those.
So I think of, you know, the heroes in place. Just watched a documentary on Netflix called The Pharmacist.
About, oh, I've heard about that. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing movie. You have to watch it. A pharmacist in Louisiana taking drastic steps to unravel the murder of his son, and I'm not going to give it away, but nonetheless, it. And then you are another one of these heroes that have taken, you know, your profession and your reputation and your time to put something together as deep as this book and about this story. But I have to ask, what has this done to you in being harassed? I mean, have you experienced anything on the negative side of being somebody that's actually told this story at the level of detail that you did?
Well, I definitely have. You know, there have been threats, there have been legal threats. And in fact, just a few days before I went to India for a book tour, articles began to appear in the Indian press about how the Modi government was planning to take action against the book, which has not happened. But there's been a lot of, you know, very critical pushback from the industry, which has claimed that the book is, you know, full of fiction and not true, or based on, you know, just one company, Ranbaxy, which is also not true. you know, and you definitely don't sign up to do investigative reporting because you want people to like you. That's definitely not part of what you're hoping to achieve when you do this stuff. But yeah, it's been, you know, it's been challenging. But on the other hand, I am really gratified by the reaction of patients and pharmacists and doctors, I might add. You know, they want information.
Right.
They want to know where their drugs are made. They want to know whether they are safe to take. They want to know what's going on in these manufacturing plants. And if they're not getting the straight story from our regulatory officials, they want to know nonetheless. So there's been a very, you know, positive response from readers of this book.
So do you think with the pace, increasing pace of technology and artificial intelligence, which I'm hearing from people like John Nosta, who is a digital health, you know, expert and travels the world talking about how big data and drug development and the crossover of artificial intelligence will be able to help with safety levels. And I mean, right now it's kind of still all in the imagination zone, even though some of it is happening. But from what you've talked to other people, how does technology make us as a culture feel safer?
You know, from my perspective, technology has not at all helped this situation. The fraud that is occurring in these plants is data fraud. And so this is manipulation of computerized data. Now, that said, the way it was the way it has been detected is because pretty heroic and innovative FDA investigators, and I feature one in my book named Peter Baker, stopped relying on data printouts from these manufacturing plants. And instead, he looked in the computers. And when he did that, he saw evidence that unofficial tests were being done and deleted. So the drugs were being pre-tested so the companies could figure out how to manipulate the test parameters so they could get passing results. And he found evidence of this in the computer metadata, right? But this whole category of data integrity violations relates very much to the computerization of these manufacturing plants. So I'm not sure that, technology may in certain ways make us safer, but it also opens whole new categories of risk.
Absolutely. The data is there if we can use it, but it can be hidden. It can be manipulated, and
right.
If it's being manipulated, then it's junk, and it's not worth the money that it's taking
right.
of that technology.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I had people who were saying to me, these abbreviated new drug applications that are being submitted by some of these companies are literally, they're being submitted to the FDA for approval. They're literally not worth the paper they're written on because they're full of fake data.
Absolutely. Mind-blowing that we put our trust in the system and the system gets manipulated for nothing more than greed, and then we have cascading and domino effect problems. So, wow. Well, I tell you what, I am a fan. I'm going to finish this book. I'd like to invite you to use the Pharmacy Podcast Network. We've been out since 2009 for any other follow-up, as well as asking any of our pharmacists to participate in any future research that you do, especially in that specialty pharmacy place where the medications are so much more expensive and the tracking of the outcomes are so much more important because of the severity of people that are sick in taking those medications. But I want to thank you for writing this and for putting yourself out there to try to change something, because if we don't have investigative reporters like yourself, physicians, pharmacists, nurses that aren't calling out processes, big companies. The New York Times article that came out about chain pharmacy, looking for metrics and you know, more prescriptions being processed instead of the health of the patient, and then the pharmacist getting worn down, knowing that they should be more rested in what they do. I mean, I think we're at a new age of healthcare where we're going to come back and we're going to start auditing many facets of our healthcare system, PBM reform and insurance reform. And so I think it's an age of calling out much of the entities that are in place, that there's nothing wrong with making money. There's nothing wrong with being capitalistic, but if it's in place of the safety of the public and of the patient, then you deserve to go down.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate an opportunity to come and talk to your listeners who are on the front lines of this problem and in a unique position to really help patients.
Absolutely. Well, you have an invitation to come back anytime, Catherine. We're talking with Catherine Eban. You can find more about her in our show notes, but her website is CatherineEban.com. Author of Bottle of Lies, an amazing finding and document of the inside story of the generic drug boom and some of the issues that are in place that we need to improve. And Catherine, thank you so much.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you.